be a roll call, please, Francis.
Commissioner Clemens?
Yes.
Commissioner Cisneros? Commissioner Chavez?
Here.
Commissioner Barker? Chairman Nord?
Here. Let's stand for the Pledge of Allegiance, please. Attention, salute. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Thank you. Now, Francis tells me that some speakers somewhere are not working today. Frank, Francis?
Yes, it's not picking up from the amplifier, so it's just coming through your microphone.
Just coming through this. So stay close if you need to talk, Helen.
Yeah, please.
Okay. First on the agenda, we've got two members absent. Al's having some surgery of some type, and Mr. Barker is at a doctor's appointment. Could be here, but at least is not as of this moment. So we have election of officers up for first here, and the question is, do we want to take care of that today, or do we want to wait for a larger body to be here?
I would recommend we wait.
I'll second that.
Okay, we got a motion, it sounded to me, and a second. Any further discussion?
Well, the only further discussion I would suggest is perhaps Mr. Berletic could share with the City Council that at one time we had 9 members on this commission, and that it might be worthy of looking into increasing the number of members to 7 or 9 so that we can maintain a quorum, because at times it's difficult.
I'll prepare a memo and get that to the city manager and ask that he, if he sees fit, relay that on to the City Council.
Okay.
And give you some feedback.
Thank you.
You were around in those days, weren't you, David? We had 9?
Yes.
And I don't remember it being particularly troublesome, I mean, as far as the massive numbers. And I think we did meet our quorum most of the time. We've done pretty good, really, with 5, but lately we've had more trouble.
It's a stretch at times.
It's a stretch, yeah.
Any one of the numbers can work, and if the Planning Commission feels strongly that they'd like to work with a larger body, I think it'd be appropriate for you to make that recommendation. So yeah. I'll get that issue to the city manager, and he can get that to the City Council.
I would certainly look at 7, and if even 9, if they're that many interested people.
It offers a larger representation of the community and ensures that we have a quorum.
Yeah. Okay, there's a motion and a second to holding off the election of officers till a future meeting when we have
a full house.
We need a vote on that, I guess. Francis, call for the vote, please.
Commissioner Chavez?
Yes.
Commissioner Clemens?
Yes.
Chairman Nord?
Yes. Okay, we have a public comment section here for anyone in the public to speak to anything that's within the jurisdiction of this commission that is not on the agenda. Does anyone want to speak at this time? Okay, hearing none, we will look at the building report for the month of July. Anything unusual there, David, that we should... I just always look at how many people are building swimming pools myself. In this kind of weather, we all need one.
I don't think there's anything unusual in there, and I don't know if the 32 multifamily units are in the July or the June. But the total for the year seems somewhat healthy relative to what other communities are doing. We're still getting 3 to 5 single-family homes a month. Some of that is from the self-help project that was in the Orchard 2 subdivision. My understanding that all of those are issued now, so we won't see any more single-family home permits from self-help.
So our number could drop unless somebody else picks up the...
The Orchard 2 subdivision is still doing 3 permits per month consistently. So we actually have pretty healthy single-family starts for a community of our size. Most other communities are having nothing and have vacant or half-built homes throughout their community.
Okay. Then I'd call for approval of that consent agenda, which consists of the building report for the month of July. Is there a motion to approve that?
Move for approval.
Second.
Motion approval. Call for the vote, please.
Commissioner Clemens?
Yes.
Commissioner Chavez?
Yes.
Chairman Nord?
Yes. Okay, under the public hearing section, annexation related entitlements for the Blossom Trail subdivision, considering request of the Barsoom Brothers Company for annexation of the 82.3 acres. We're going to have a staff report first on this and go from there.
Handed to you today was a letter from the project applicant, represented by Vince DiMaggio, DW Land Development, and they've worked with staff, and the staff and the applicant are requesting that we postpone the public hearing to October 1st to give us more time to get draft conditions completed and agreed upon, and we feel it's more important that you have all of that information in front of you before you start discussing the project and starting to make recommendations. Again, you have a letter from the applicant in front of you. Staff's in agreement that we should postpone until October 1st. And we're asking that you not open the public hearing, but rather we'll re-notice the public hearing for October 1st.
Okay. You've heard that request. I told John a couple minutes ago, and I will not be here on October 1st, and I don't know if that presents a problem with, again, getting that quorum or not, but I know I'm going to be out of town that day. Don't know how we should consider that. David, any recommendations there?
I'd like to schedule for October 1st and assume we'll be able to make a quorum with the other four members, but should we find that we can't, we'll have to postpone to the subsequent meeting.
Okay, I can live with that. Is there a motion then to postpone until October 1?
Postponed. Take the request for the open.
Yeah, the annexation.
Postponed
late
until October 1st, 2009.
Okay, is there a second?
I'll second.
Yeah, motion and second. Any further discussion at all?
Questions related to the draft mitigated negative deck. Should those be held till that time, or is there?
Yes.
Okay.
If you have any specific questions or you want clarification on any information, feel free to give us a call.
Okay, I'll do that.
And we'll get you any additional information you need, but discussion regarding
right.
that okay. should not start
yet. Yeah, I had about six items that I wanted clarification on. Thank you.
Okay, call for the vote, please.
Commissioner Chavez?
Yes.
Commissioner Clemens?
Yes.
Chairman Nord?
Yes.
I'd like to point out that the property owner, Mr. Todd Barsoom, is present today. If you want to give him an opportunity to say hello. He came all this way.
Miles and miles.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay. Well, we'll see you October 1st, so don't go too far. Okay, then the only thing remaining then is communication and staff reports. Rob Terry's got a presentation for us. So, Rob, you're on. You didn't know you were going to be the keynote speaker today, did you?
And what we'd like to start doing, as staff attends workshops or conferences, or as planning commissioners attend any kind of workshop or conference, we're going to ask that individual be put on the agenda and just give a real brief presentation so we could all get the maximum benefit of any opportunity one of us is getting to attend.
Good. Good.
Becoming a very popular type of buzzword that you're hearing right now. You'll
hear it very often in the same conversation as something like smart growth, green building, those type of things. I wanted to point out the Awani principles that were spoken of at the beginning of the workshop simply because that relates very strongly to the city of Reedley.
Specific plan. Right.
So the Awani principles, as you well know, promote health, walkable, vibrant communities, and they're a major component in our specific plan. Form-based codes utilize these principles by regulating places instead of uses. Mm-hmm. The current zoning that the city of Reedley uses is referred to as Euclidean zoning, and that zoning is where we regulate what uses can happen in certain places. Form-based codes almost take the opposite approach on that. Instead of regulating any type of use that happens, they regulate the actual form of the building and not as much the uses. So you can see right there that some of the positives that you'll get out of a form-based code system are going to be comfortable and efficient street frontages, architecture and subdivision standards.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to provide for clear and streamlined administration because there's less you have to worry about the use in the building. It's more what the building looks like. And they're going to provide for predictable building results. You know what type of architecture you're going to get because your standards are very specific, stating how a building can look, its setback, its size, a lot of things that you have in Euclidean zoning, but even more specific on the actual look of the building and not intended to really oversee the use of what's going to happen inside that building.
There's clear expectations.
Exactly. Yeah. But mm-hmm. codes are much more about the look that you're going to get as opposed to what's actually going to happen inside of the building.
Mm-hmm.
So you just from that simple statement right there, you can see that there would be some great positives that could come out of that, and there could also be some definite challenges that can arise from that as well. Form-based codes rely heavily on what's called the transect zone model. Transect zones provide the basis for what they call a real neighborhood structure. It relies heavily on walkable streets, mixed-use, transportation options, and housing diversity. Most people will start from the left and go to the right, but on this model I always thought it was more appropriate to start from the right and go back to the left. Where you see to the far right, your special district, many times referred to by people as your big box type of business. So this is going to be your heavy commercial type of use, could even be industrial type of uses. And then as you move down left of the scale, you're moving more and more into an urban type of setting. So you'll go into an urban core zone, which really has some small nodes of. I don't think we have anywhere in our city that would actually qualify technically as a special district to the far right. But some of our urban core zones, say the Save Art grocery shopping center, that would probably fall in the urban core zone. And then as you're moving to the urban center and then to the general urban, it gets less and less dense on the use. The real intent of what they're trying to do is they're trying to keep things walkable and sustainable. They're trying to get away from anything that's going to be heavy on the transportation aspect. They would prefer for people to be able to be on friendly, open, safe streets, walking and riding bicycles as opposed to having to get into their car to drive to whatever amenities it is that they're looking for. There are 10 points that you need to give heed to when you're trying to implement a form-based code in your city. So we'll just go through each one of these very briefly. The first one, use physical form instead of use, is your organizing principle. Like I was saying, the main difference between Euclidean zoning and form-based codes are, one is the look. You're going for the look, so you're going to say, we're going to dictate the form of how this is going to shape. So that has to really be your underlying goal, is that you're going to look for that form. Two, you need to analyze the entire city for a form-based code application. A lot of times when someone will look at something like a form-based code, they'll try to come up with what's commonly referred to as a hybrid. And that's, we'll take this and kind of overlay it on top of what we have. And although you can definitely take principles from something like a form-based code and implement them into Euclidean zoning, if you try to carve out a niche of your city and say this part of the city is form-based code and the rest of it is going to be Euclidean, you're going to run into a lot of administrative type of problems, things that, that are allowed in certain parts of town that aren't allowed in other parts of town with direct conflict between the standards that have already been set by the city leadership. Mm. So the third, graphically assess your existing zones. The reason why they're going to say that is that you need to really know what you're working with before you start looking into what do we want the architecture or this form to actually look like. A good example of that would be, how do we want our downtown to look and how does it currently look? So you start to graphically assess those zones and see what you have, where you want to go, and where you are. Number four, use existing positive conditions as the DNA of the desired form. Many of the smaller communities in the Central Valley have small nodes in their towns that are exactly what they want. They would like to see that type of development all over town. So what you want to do is you want to identify the places in your city that you have something like that and use that as your base, as your architectural base to start branching more and more out. Number five, minimize the total number of zones within the code. This is actually a big one. In form-based coding, the less zones that you have, the better. Because it streamlines all of your administration. It makes the architecture a little bit easier to come up with standards. So as opposed to having maybe four or five commercial zones, you have a commercial zone, and that's it. So. Number six is to adjust your general development standards. This is usually the most involved of all of the items that you're going through, because what you have to do is you have to go and strip all of your current development standards either down to the bone or break them all the way down and start all over again to get these new standards that you'd like to get into your form-based code. Number seven is to be clear about the intent and the hierarchy within your mixed-use zones. Mixed-use is a very popular word that is thrown around, very commonly around now. And I think a lot of times when people use that, they're not 100% sure exactly what mixed-use actually means. You can ask someone and they'll say, what means you can do more than one thing on one site? Which, technically, if you want to break it down, yeah, that's what it means. But you have to be very clear on the intent of what will we allow to happen to a mixed-use zone. Do we want industrial to be able to happen on a ground floor and commercial above that? You could have problems with that, or that might be exactly the intent that you're going for. It's completely up to you, but you need to discuss those items and make sure that they're out on the table before you start looking into a form-based code. Number eight, revise the application process and requirements. Form-based codes are really meant to break down the application process and to try to streamline a lot of things for applicants, because they can come in and look at just a few pieces of paper instead of a stack full of municipal code. They can look at two, three, four pieces of paper before you show them, this is what your building needs to look like. Here are the exact standards that you have to meet. And if they can meet those things, I mean, it's in, pay your fees, get the permits, and off you go. In the perfect world, this is what they're going for.
Okay.
Number nine, think carefully about document structure. Because you are going to be bearing down the amount of requirements and standards, you need to make sure that you are very careful about the things that you either exclude or the things that you include, just to be sure that you are not going to put the city in a situation where they're not going to yield the product that they were hoping to yield. And number 10, make walkable urbanism the default. Like I said, really the transect zone in the form-based code, more than anything, it's about trying to make walkable communities, communities that are getting away from
cars.
Right, from any type of automobile transportation. These are just some graphical examples of what you might see in a form-based code. The illustrative plan, I know it's kind of hard to see, but this is kind of the classic popular selling point for a form-based code. The maps, technically when you look at them, they're a lot easier to read and a lot easier on the eyes than some of the current zoning that you might see right now. The regulating plan looks very similar to what you would see in the zoning plan right now, but in conjunction with that illustrative plan, it becomes much easier to read. The building form standards, as you can see right there, up at the top it says townhouse, apartment, workplace, storefront.
Mm.
One, two pages of standards, and that's it, as opposed to, you know, maybe 40 or 50 pages that you might have right now for certain zones. And public space standards are going to be the same all throughout the different zones you'll have for commercial, urban, residential. What that does is that really puts more emphasis on the street structure itself. Trees, distance, trees apart, your sidewalks, your setbacks are typically a little bit larger because they're trying to make the pedestrian feel safer and have a little more room to roam instead of leaving all that space open to the cars. So how form-based codes could be used in Reedley if Reedley were to choose to use some type of form-based coding system? First and foremost, seeing the size of Reedley, I think the biggest thing that we do for us if we were to make that decision would be downtown preservation and revitalization. Because of the architectural features that you place upon the form-based code, so we can either revitalize or protect what we have in the downtown. Two, commercial corridor protection. Because it is so specific on the type of form that your commercial has to take, you know what your commercial nodes are going to look like. Three, residential accessibility to services. Because of the walkability feature that is so inherent with the form-based code, you know that your residential areas are going to yield you, if they're built as designed, they're going to yield you good walkable accessibility to your services. Number four, it gives you great protection of open space and natural habitat. Reedley has the Kings River, which is a commodity that many people just don't get to have anything like that, and it's a resource that you can really use a form-based code to help out with, because, the standards are so specific for what you can and can't do in certain areas. And number five, streamlined administration, which invites strong, sustainable development. Probably the largest money saver feature of a form-based code is the fact that people can come into the city, you know what the standards are supposed to be, they can very plainly see what those standards are supposed to be on their design aspect, and the hope with that is that they can be able to come in, get their application up and moving, and permitted and out the door very quickly.
Wow.
So from the workshop, these were the notes that I had taken, and the five ways that I thought that the workshop materials would apply to Reedley the very most. And with that, that's the conclusion of my presentation.
Very nice.
Is this form process being used currently by towns our size?
You know, it's really more popular right now in Bay Area cities, so I would say 100,000 plus. Any of the smaller towns that I was able to get any type of feedback from in regards to form-based code, they were only using like a variation of a form-based code, more an architectural review and architectural design standards in their downtown areas. So it's tough to answer because it was only a week ago that I attended, so I haven't been able to put as much time into it to really find out if other communities are using it and how it might be helping them, so we can either learn from their mistakes or maybe take some good advice from them. Yeah. The only ones that I saw mostly in their downtown that are our size.
Who developed this process? I mean, did it come out of an architectural school or a city design school like good old Cal Poly?
Well, you know, Cal Poly does a lot of great stuff.
Oh, yeah, they did.
That's a shame it's gone. I don't know if I could say that it really came from any one person. The person, and I'm going to slaughter his name, but I believe his last name is Krasinski, Paul Krasinski. He was actually one of the gentlemen that was the presenters there, but the last name is very difficult for me to pronounce. He's the only one that's written an actual book on it. He is an AICP, so he's a certified planner. His ideas and everything that he was sharing seemed to be really, really touching upon a lot of different disciplines. But like I said, he's the only one with an actual book out right now that talks about.
Where's he from? You know.
He is from the Bay Area. He's from Benicia.
That's interesting.
So the firm that he works for, which is O'Neill Architecture and Development, they are out of Benicia, and they last year did Benicia's entire zoning update and took their entire ordinance and have the whole thing down. I believe he said it was 52-54 pages.
Wow.
The entire thing. And he said when they started it was over 400 pages. So Something like that, I think, could sound very, very enticing, but of course, you also have to think about the flip side. You need to make sure that you're balancing streamlined processes and enough control to make sure that you're able to protect the community and ensure that the community as a whole is getting what's going to be good for them and what they really desire.
I see that as really enhancing the specific plan and the Kings River Corridor plan. And correct me if I'm wrong, I mean, some of those layering looks like for your mapping and illustration is probably what you're using in your ArcView now, your ESRI ArcView, and so the possibilities are endless there.
I think they are. I know as he was sharing a lot of his thoughts and processes even that he used in Benicia, I kept thinking to myself, I think that was the intent of the specific plan. I think that's what we need in the specific plan. I mean, we're going for increased density, walkability, and
connectivity.
A lot of that goes right into
it. Great, thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Rob. Good to hear it.
Fit right in with the general plan, too, update.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Following our 2030 general plan update, we'll be doing a comprehensive zoning ordinance update. We'll take concepts, at this point, we'll come and talk to you about it, but we'll take concepts from the form-based code information here. Really, we've already adopted the Ahwahnee Principles and Landscape of Choice documents in the Reedley-specific plan, so the goals are the same. It's already using the same tools to achieve those goals. As Rob mentioned, it's usually in larger communities where form-based codes are being embraced. Visalia adopted a form-based code for their master planned growth area that hasn't had any construction yet, so they're not practicing it yet. They do have a component for this one area, I believe it's northeast of their hospital, that growth area. But in general, I kind of get the sense that the form-based code is a little bit overkill for a community the size of Reedley, where we have distinct changes. We're geographically small. We have residential areas that have small standard streets. We have commercial industrial areas that have large standard streets. Where this could be very, very beneficial is how do you ensure that you get a mix of uses where you're not varying the street sizes. We're not looking to put larger streets in residential areas and mix commercial and industrial uses. On the mixed-use issue, I think Rob already pointed it out, our biggest concern with the downtown is architecture. Mm-hmm. Really, where this is appealing to us is how do we ensure that we get the same look and feel that we have in our downtown today. We want to continue that same architecture. We don't necessarily want a greater mix of uses to be permitted because it's geographically so small. And on that mixed-use issue, I think we get hung up on thinking that mixed uses should be in the same structure. Because construction cost-wise, it's not practical. It doesn't make sense to do new construction where you're putting commercial on the ground floor, residential on second and third floor on vacant land. It may make more sense that in our downtown we can have some mixed-use zoning that says you can build apartments in the downtown, but here's the architecture that you need to use. And I could see an apartment building being built right next to a commercial building. They'll have the same look, same architecture, but they'll have different uses inside. And can we get the same effect without a strict, a form-based code, completely changing over to a form-based code, but as we're already trying to do, control the architecture and be specific about the kinds of uses.
So with that said, are you saying that this is going away from the look that they achieved like in downtown Sioux Sun City where you've got the restaurant on the bottom floor and the owner-operator may live up above? And
No, I think more than anything, when people think about mixed use, that's going to be the first example that's going to come to their mind, business ground floor, residential. I think more of the discussion now is turning to mixed use doesn't have to be vertical, it can also be horizontal.
Okay.
So I don't want to say they're moving away from anything. I think they're just simply
they're adding another feature.
What the definition and what the thought of what is mixed use actually. It doesn't have to be in the same exact structure. It can just be mixed uses next to each other, above one another.
Well, and I sense that's almost what you're working to achieve here in this project, that was coming before us today. I mean, I see that mixture, and that's, I mean, the direction we were going with the specific plan, I thought.
Right. In the Ridley, in the current zoning ordinance in the downtown, you can have a restaurant on the ground floor, and mm-hmm. you can have a residence on the second floor, but it requires a conditional use permit. Form-based code would say, just make sure the building looks like this, and all those uses are fine. Mm-hmm. You don't need to worry about a use permit. So we may want to say, rather than switch to a form-based code, why don't we eliminate that requirement for a conditional use permit for the second floor use? Just say comply mm-hmm. with building code requirements, and these uses are allowed in the downtown.
Make it
follow
happen.
This structure. It's almost close enough. I don't want to call it a hybrid because I'm not that familiar with form-based codes. But the ability to do it's already there.
Right.
Is there red tape that prevents it from happening? Mm-hmm. And what can you do to change that? And that's what we'd like to do with the zoning ordinance update.
And it still maintains your standards, and it still promotes good business growth and smart growth. Makes sense.
How does that relate to residential, single-family residential areas, or does it?
As far as form-based codes and how do they relate, the largest issue there is going to be with how your form looks. When you walk down that road, how does that feel? And I think the biggest example that's typically used with that is you'll see movies that are supposed to be from the 50s, mm-hmm. and you see these streets that look very friendly, giant trees. Oak trees, and I mean, everything looks very inviting to walk there, take a walk mm-hmm. with your partner, take your dog for a walk, whatever it mm-hmm. may be. They're trying to get back to that type of feel. Because it's not just how it's going to look, it's how it actually ends up affecting the area everywhere from economically to how does it affect people emotionally. Hmm. So that residentially, they're really going more for the form than anything else.
There's a misconception that the form-based code focuses only on the street pattern and the architecture, and then it's a free-for-all land use wise. Mm-hmm. And that's not true. You need to have some control over what kind of uses can be next to each other. They're usually not as detailed as your standard Euclidean zoning. So there's, don't think that it says, as long as you build this type of structure, you can put it whatever you want in it. That's not the intent. It's just focusing more from the architecture side than the land use side. Mm-hmm. And right now, we're really focused on the land use side. We have a very detailed list of very specific uses that could occur in different districts, and that's the main focus of our zoning ordinance, where they're saying shift it over here to where the main focus should be, primarily concern yourself with the structure, the street pattern, the connectivity. The land uses aren't as important. Still make sure you're not putting liquor stores next to daycares. There are restrictions. You know, the structures will work just the same, but you're not going to allow those things to happen. So the form-based code is still going to have some guidelines as to, it's going to say certain things can't happen in this area, but it's really saying just focus on the structure, the street layout, over the land uses. And so the question is that where Ridley is? Is that what best suit Ridley today? My general assessment is that it's more applicable for denser urbanized communities than Ridley. Ridley is so geographically small. We don't need to get a mix of uses in our downtown. It's only 3 or 4 blocks. We know what we want. We want commercial retail uses. Can we handle some others? Yes, we can. What's the extent you want to allow? And I don't think we're that far off. We just make it too difficult to achieve that. Mm-hmm. And that's what we'll work through in our zoning ordinance update.
Okay. Any other things from commissioners? Reports from planning commissioners regarding planning commission activities. Anything hot cooking out there we need to know besides the sidewalk heating up?
We got the Blossom Trail coming back to you, that project coming back. We have a draft environmental impact report that was supposed to be circulated today, but it is going to be, and a notice came out in the paper today, it's going to be circulated a week from today for the Ridley Family Apartments project. So you may be getting calls again from concerned citizens about that project. It's going to have a, I believe, 45-day review period. That was supposed to start today, but it's actually going to start on the 10th. And then following that review and analysis of the comments that come back, we'll schedule it for a hearing before the Planning Commission. Tentatively scheduled for the first meeting in December.
Okay.
And that's it.
Same size project, no modifications at this point.
No changes to the project. We'll wait until we review the environmental impact report. It may wind up having additional mitigation measures that should be included that could modify the project.
Right.
And we'll present those if that's what the analysis says.
You know, we talked about foreclosures last time briefly. And we now have one on my block. I'm assuming because the people have vacated it. There's no for sale sign. The lawn's turning brown. Do you actually try to contact the bank, or what do you do to keep, well, you were saying you had one next door to you to try to keep the lawns green or the yards up? Or
if you would contact Frances tomorrow, okay. I'll give her a phone number to get you to. Fresno County and the city of Reedley through Fresno County is involved in a program called the Neighborhood Stabilization Program.
Okay.
And there was some federal stimulus money that came down that is supposed to help with that problem. It's a finite amount of money where they're going to identify foreclosed homes, purchase them, and put income-qualified families into the, you know, refurbish and put income-qualified families into those foreclosed homes. We have one in Reedley on the corner of Palm and Reed Avenue. Mm. I believe it's Palm. So there may be an opportunity there. You can talk to that group and say, I think there's some homes here. Is there anything you could do about it?
Or and then they do the research to find out who's the lender. And
yes.
Okay.
It's a small amount of money, not enough for a community the size of Reedley to administer a program like that itself,
right.
So we partner
right.
with Fresno County.
Okay.
It's the Neighborhood Stabilization Program. So might be enough resources to handle a handful of homes in Reedley, so if we can highlight where those are located and get them to take a look at it.
Somebody told me the other day that banks or mortgage companies or whoever owns some of these places are now grouping them in groups of six and selling six at a time as opposed to one at a time, just to make them more attractive to you know, investors and whatnot. So, knocked me out of the game.
Shucks.
Anything else? I see Walgreens is open.
No.
Haven't walked in yet. But.
Sorry, they couldn't tell me.
Okay, with that, we'll adjourn this meeting. Thank you very much.